ball skills so that you could win? Is that why you sent her to UNI? Or did you have mercy on them and send her there for that reason? Because she's really good, but it's still not enough.
Well, I mean, obviously she's my baby girl, so she's, you know, great at everything. But no, I sent my daughter to UNI for two reasons. One, she's an education major. They're outstanding school for education.
Sure.
And the second reason is, and this is in all seriousness, UNI has an outstanding campus ministry. John Wagner is an outstanding campus pastor. I could not be, as a father, you know, more pleased and happy and relaxed about where my daughter goes to church on Sunday morning and the spiritual care she gets. It's a great place.
Now, so, what I want to know is if your daughter was playing second base or if she was playing, I mean, I got to get an official kickball rule book, but you wouldn't like take your daughter out sliding in somewhere if she was on the other team, would you?
Absolutely, I would. In fact, I did that one year. I went into second base and one of the young ladies from UNI was playing second and she backed up and I slid and she went flying and landed on top of me and I've probably got 100 pounds on her and the first words out of her mouth were, "Pastor Mons, I didn't hurt you, did I?"
Oh, geez.
I thought,
I could picture these freshmen that show up thinking, "Oh, pastors playing. Pastors are always nice, and they're full of peace and love and joy." And they don't realize how vicious it can be.
Yeah, that's right. It gets.
Anyways, yeah. I know when I had Tim Gamble, the campus ministry director from UNI, on, I probably said some things about how I was rooting for them. I meant it, but I'm rooting for both sides. I could be bribed.
You could be bribed, okay.
But anyways, I'm looking forward to, less people think that's the only thing we have to talk about today. I am looking forward to coming down. I'll probably get over, if Pastor Bigley's listening, maybe get over to Ames, to Iowa State, and kind of see some of the Iowa campus ministries while I come up. And looking forward to that. That's going to be a great time.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you here.
So there's a reason why I asked you on today. On around Martin Luther King Day, and by the way, I'm sorry about the theologian in residence comment. On as I always tell people, you only make fun of people that you really like, and I'm proud to say I make fun of you a lot, and you can probably give it back just as much.
It may happen. Yes,
so, yes, I'm sure it will when I come there. But in all seriousness, Pastor Mons is a terrific campus pastor. There is no need for any other theologian. Plus, he also has ecclesiastical supervision, undersight responsibilities more than most because he also serves as the first vice president of the Iowa District East, part of the movement of LCMSU pastors to take over the synod through campus ministry. So, having said that, so on around Martin Luther King Day, it was reported that Portland Community College in Oregon was going to hold a Whiteness History Month in April at each of its four campuses. And this community college has about 90,000 students. It's enormous. It's one of the top 10 to 15 largest schools in the country. And trying to figure out what this Whiteness Month is, and since I don't know a whiter campus pastor than Pastor Mons... Thus, the play the funky music, white boy. And again, what did I say? You only joke around with those that you love. But
there you go.
Thought that would be a fun thing for us to talk about. Now, we are all familiar with Black History Month. Black History Month started in 1970 or so. Every state in the country had celebrated it since about 1976. But this is a little different. Now, do you guys celebrate Whiteness History Month in Iowa? Have you run across this before?
No, in fact, I was a little taken aback when you sent the article that it appeared in. I think there was an article in the Huffington Post about this. You sent me a link about it, and I looked at it. And I thought I'm a little confused here. My first initial reaction was I don't understand the difference between white and whiteness, and also the aspect of really what is this all about. Sure. What are they driving at?
Well, you know, we're used to Black History Month, where it's designed to kind of highlight, great, like you're doing with your Women of the Church thing, designed to kind of show, great contributions and whatnot to remember great heroes of the Black civil rights cause and people that have done wonderful things that happen to be African American. This thing is designed to deconstruct the effect of what they refer to as so-called white supremacy. And now to introduce this, and I want to get your reaction a little bit. We'll talk through it a little bit, but just to give people an idea, when this came across, I saw it, Campus Reformed in an article, Huffington Post. There was something on FoxNews.com and whatnot in the last couple of weeks. This is a little bit about what they say right on the school's website. And you got to keep the backdrop of this. We've had all the Black Lives Matter stuff going on, the stuff down at Mizzou, you know, and other colleges with all this, you know, all this discussion in angriness and vitriol about alleged, you know, racism because of inequalities in terms of the number of Black faculty and whatnot. Whiteness, this is directly from their website. Whiteness History Month won't focus on whites as a group of people. The discussions will center on whiteness as a social construct. Whiteness has a long history in European imperialism and epistemologies. It does not simply refer to skin color, but an ideology based on beliefs, values, behaviors, habits, and attitudes, which result in the unequal distribution of power and privilege based on skin color. What do you make of that? What's your first reaction to that when you hear that kind of talk, Pastor Mons?
I think there is something of a kind of a knee-jerk reaction to it, to say, hey, I don't know that I'm a part of this. I don't believe that I think that way of I am superior because I happen to have white-colored skin. And if you were to see me, you would know I really have white-colored skin. I'm
right. I wasn't
fair.
Joking about that.
You're not joking about that. I'm pretty fair, blonde hair, blue-eyed kind of guy.
Sure.
And I don't think in those terms, but apparently it's out there, and it's something that I think we've become more aware of as the issue and the topic has been raised and the discussion has moved on. Stephen Colbert had the leader of Black Lives Matter on his show on, I believe, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and that was kind of an eye-opening interview in terms of what is meant by this and what kind of privileges are out there simply because you're white, and perhaps because you experience these things as being white, you don't necessarily know that they are offensive, or that someone of a different race is looking and saying, hey, I see a discrepancy here, I see a problem here, and I can find no other reason for it than the fact that you have white skin and I don't. And it's an interesting conversation to have.
Well, it seems like, you know, we have seen kind of a, I don't want to get into political talk here, but it seems like, you know, the last several years we've seen an escalation in terms of kind of racial tension. You know, we got mm-hmm. Ferguson and Baltimore and all these different types of things that have taken place, the Black Lives Matter movement. And I don't know if any of your students sense this on campus or if your daughter senses this. I know that I run into it. This whole idea of, yeah, well, you're a, you know, and for you and I, well, you're a white male, you know, Christian. You are the least interesting person that there could possibly be. And if there aren't quotas for schools to get people like you, and it's mm-hmm. almost like you're, I was telling my eldest son who's going off to college next year, that, you know, you're going to be at a disadvantage, you know, when you apply for school, you're a white Christian male. People view you as being part of the problem, part of the, well, you guys, you're the ones that have always gotten whatever you wanted, and all these other movements have had to result because of what you've done. And he's like, well, what have I done?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Do you run into this with your students? It's kind of this idea that, you know, obviously it's like we're at a disadvantage because we're Christians and people make assumptions mm-hmm. about us. And then because you're white, if you're white, and then because you're, you know, in terms of being male, it's almost like we're at a complete disadvantage, even though they're claiming white privilege for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we see that. And that folks are wondering about that. you know, I was talking with my son about this. He's a few years away from college, but he goes, I don't think there's any scholarship stead for white guy from Iowa, Lutheran, Christian, dare I even say Republican. He goes, there's no...
Boy, that don't add to the mix now.
No, and, you know, his thing is, am I everything that's wrong? Am I everything that's wrong? And how did that happen? How did we get that way?
Well, and it's interesting that they're talking about you know, whiteness instead of white. And it's almost, you know, in terms of, it's not Blackness History Month, it's Black History Month. And,
yeah,
you know, we've had people that, well, I self-identify as a black female. There was this gal that identified as a black female, even though she was never black, but she wanted to identify as that. And so whiteness is something to deconstruct. And it's always interesting to me that the idea here, here's a little bit of another quote from the website. It's readily accepted that white history is taught year-round, like all history is white history because white people taught it. That was my excursus, but white history is taught year-round to the exclusion of minority histories, but the literal history of whiteness, how and when and why what it means to be white was formulated, is always neglected. The construction of the white identity is a brilliant piece of social engineering. Its origins and heritage should be examined in order to add a critical layer of complexity to a national conversation. Social engineering. So the idea is this, that basically since white people got to write the history all these years, that this was a brilliant piece of social engineering. They got to write the books. Those that are of minority and skin color didn't get to write the books. Therefore, you know, there's going to be this perpetual kind of retribution in terms of the need to have these types of things and kind of critically deconstruct everything we know because it was written by white people. Now, my question is, I have to ask, this is very serious. Did you social engineer your whiteness, Pastor Mons? Did you choose to be fair-skinned, white, blue-eyed, you know, blonde hair, whatever? Did you do that?
Yeah, heavens no. You know, I came out that way.
Yeah.
I was born to, you know, my parents, both my parents were white. I was born a white kid. And that's been what it is. It's not something that I chose to be. In the same way that no person of color or of any race chose to be that race. You were born into that race. And there's something there, and the history thing is kind of what kind of got me. And perhaps this is because of the kind of history I studied. Part of my undergrad was in music history, specifically in American music history.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't talk about American music history without talking people of many, many ethnic backgrounds and races. You know, my real area of concentration is jazz, early jazz, and many of the great early jazz musicians were not white men. And now there was a lot of problems with the ability of bands being integrated.
Sure.
And then there's I really liked Jack Teagarden. Teamed up with Jack Teagarden, the trombone player. He teamed up with Louis Armstrong, and they
knew we'd have a trombone reference today, Pastor.
Well, you got to get one in there. Yeah. But you know, their thing was when they talked about this collaborations that they did, it was about the music and what could they do, and it wasn't they weren't thinking too much about the aspect of well, I'm a black man, you're a white man, this is never going to work. They just did it, and the music that they produced was amazing stuff that
and all
anybody,
of which should be celebrated. Absolutely.
Exactly, yeah, that everybody celebrates because it's incredible stuff. It really, I find it, and maybe that's one of the things having a music background, as I was looking at the materials for this and doing some reading on it. And I know your sons are musicians. Your wife is an incredible musician. Music auditions, when they're done right, are behind a screen. You have no idea who's back there. You just listen to them play. And if they play well enough for the gig, they get the gig.
Sure.
If they don't, they're not in. Mm. Nobody knows if they're, you know, standing there in, you know, polka-dotted boxer shorts, or if they're a guy or a girl or whatever. It's just done because they make a contribution. So I think that the contribution needs to be discussed and talked about and celebrated, no matter who makes it.
You know, it's interesting because some people, we just got a couple minutes here left, but some people consider, well, the LCMS is such a white church. Is that a thing? I mean, are we a white church just because we're probably 90% plus white, but are we a white church?
Yeah, no, because the church is colorblind, if you will. If you look at the church and when you go through the scriptures, you know, Paul to the Galatians, there's neither slave nor free, male or female. If you look at the great depiction of the church in heaven, it's people of every tribe, nation, and language are there. There's not this business of you're not a part of us. You know, what does John tell us? Jesus died for our sins, and not just for ours only, but for the sins of the world. The inclusivity of the gospel needs to be reflected in the inclusivity of the church when it comes to race and all kinds of things. We need to have that.
No, that's and we do, and sometimes people don't realize that. You know, we do have a, you know, historically black college in Selma.
We have a historically black college. We have a black ministry board.
Sure. We just released this Rosa Young, the first Rosa video about efforts of this phenomenal lady in the South. We send missionaries all, you know, to Africa. You know, we have groups on our campus ministries reaching out to international students, many from various African and Middle Eastern nations, Chinese, Asians, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, it's interesting, though. We got to wrap this up. Love to talk more about it, but it's kind of this new field that we have, critical white studies is what they're calling it. And it strikes me as being a little similar to religious studies curriculums, where the goal is to deconstruct something that the secular progressives find unhelpful to their cause. So we'll have to see this play out.
Yeah, religious studies, women's studies, all those specific, you know, fill-the-blank studies, it's all about that. And I wonder if that at times, while I think it's incredibly important and wonderful to look at the contributions and to look at the history and to understand what happened and to celebrate what happened, I think we also have to be careful at not swinging the pendulum so far as to drive a wedge deeper into problems that already exist.
Absolutely.
We're seeking to divide.
We have to get rolling here. Love to talk more about it. But hey, thanks for being with us today. And we'll have to keep try to help me out here. Let's keep an eye on how this thing develops. And it's going to be in April. We'll probably be hearing more about this. We'll address it down the line. That's one of the reasons why we have this program. But thanks for joining us. And looking forward to seeing you. When is this thing again that I'm coming to referee?
End of April.
And I will be completely I will be completely impartial. Well, that's all we have time for here on the Student Union on the beautiful campus of LCMSU. Remember, college is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help.